people who know opera cannot live without these masterpieces. When I'm asked to do another edition of Barbieri di Siviglia, I did dozens of productions, hundreds of performances. Well, I say, no, please, another Barbieri, another Lucia, another Traviata. But when I start working, really, I change completely my attitude. It's such a masterpiece that every time you repeat, and every time you do with a different director, you do with a different singer, with another orchestra, you really discover, you find that you can do something that you never did before. This is a comic opera. And the comic opera of Rossini must be played with a different sound than if you play Verdi, Beethoven, Wagner. Use light sound, great lightness, great joy. Amuse yourself. I would like to see smiling faces. But especially listen to the stage, to the singers. It will be nice to spend 3 hours playing this music.
Think that Rossini wrote it when he was, what, 23, 24? And the legend is that he wrote it in 13 days. And I mean, you know, it's just incredible because the fountain of music, of numbers, and, you know, and he caught the spirit of Beaumarchais. Because Beaumarchais, you know, he wrote 3 plays about Figaro. One was the Barbara Seville, the other one was Marriage of Figaro, and the other one then was The Guilty Mother, La Mère Coupable. And this character is evolved, and it was very much ahead of his time because in the play, all of a sudden, the middle class had a role. Because in the past, it was either the aristocrats and the servants. There was nothing in the middle. And also, the aristocrats always had the upper hand. And all of a sudden, here you get a servant who really has the upper hand over all the masters, and he kind of turns them all around on his little finger. So the comedy is inherent in the piece. Okay, now the Que Mai Sera, could that be a little more scared? Yeah, not angry.
Less voice.
Yeah. Okay, because he's already told you that half of the city is as...
I know who's there.
Of course, no, of course you do. But you're going to have to play as if you don't.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? You're playing along. You set this whole thing up.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? So that, but at the same time, you're kind of playing along with them, so you draw them in the track. The only thing that I think it gets out of the hand of Figaro is when the soldiers come that much.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? He's okay with the sergeant, but when the whole regiment comes...
Yeah, I thought I just paid him.
Yeah, exactly. That's going to cost you more.
Yeah.
Or actually, that's going to cost him
more.
Yeah. Okay, good. What a stage director does then, it's invent the timings, invent the climaxes of the jokes, and then use the musical interludes for the development of the characters and the development of the comic situation, you see. And so that is the function of a stage director, that should then take all of the elements that is within the piece itself, and stimulate the actress to kind of search on that and find ways of communicating that to the audience, because after all, theater is communication. Yeah, and then relax there.
Okay.
You know, because you know, no, because let me show you what I mean. So if you grab him, come here, see the silhouette, because what I don't want is this. Do you see what I mean? It's this.
If you watch him, he teaches you.
Yeah, and it kind of like that. Yeah, you know, very comfortable.
Yeah.
Okay.
I stick on my butt without even trying.
Okay. It's a cute butt. That's okay.
And it's not so much that he says do this, but physically he can put himself in the character that it gives you a visual contact, a visual example of how he want, of what he wants to accomplish, and it's very good. It's obvious that he's probably studied his body, his physical, you know, what he brings to the table physically, and how it looks from a standpoint of seeing it from the theater, what reads.
One of the reasons why I love our production so much is because Lotfi is making sure that, you know, that we play them as real people and not just slapstick humor and gags, you know. I mean, the show is funny, but it's most funny when the characters start out very real and
quite.
You know, with very real intentions and trying to do things that they really care about. You know, that's the way that the audience can become really involved and have an even better time.
It's a tricky balance. It should not be affected.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Natural,
it should be
but...
so natural that there's kind of the enchantment.
Yeah.
Okay, so I just thought especially for the lessons.
Okay.
Especially when you get dramatic.
Uh-huh.
Control. It's practically like a Baroque aria.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like a Gluck, Iphigenie, or Alceste, or one of these things. It's wonderful, especially as Triumphera.
Right. Right.
All right?
Okay.
Lovely.
Thank you, dear.
Directing, it's collaboration. You're collaborating with the artist because I always say simplistically, if they look good, I look good, you know.
Ah, Rosina. Well, happily for me, she is a Spanish gal, and I do have Spanish blood, so I use that as much as possible. And like my other role, Carmen, there's a lot of similarities there. However, Rosina is not a gypsy, so she, you know, tames herself a lot more. But she is feisty. She's very smart, very spunky, full of ideas, ready to kind of join the craziness at the drop of a hat. Passionate, but she's also young. She's very young, and so
sweet 16.
Yes, and I love to explore that with her. The kind of innocence, you know. I'm more jaded at my age, so it's nice to kind of go back and remember what it felt like, you know, maybe to be in love for the first time, that kind of thing. So she's a great gal.
Nome ancora, il nome. Ah, che bel nome! Si chiama.
E lei si chiama?
Poverina! Si chiama Erro. S-I-Z. Rosie. N-A-N-A. Rosina.
Now, Figaro. Figaro's an interesting character. He's one I like playing because I always think it's easy to play characters that have a little bit, I think, of your own character within them there somewhere.
Yes.
And Figaro, without blowing my own trumpet, is a bit of a... He's a bright spark. He's a fix-it man. He's the person who you go to with a problem. He'll always try his best to solve things for you. Of course, it comes with a price tag attached. You know, he doesn't do things for free, but he does do them out of a sense of sort of honour and affection. And I think in this case, he sees Rosina as his female alter ego, his little sister. And so I think he's sort of secretly quite pleased not only to get the large paycheck that's attached to this job of bringing the Count Almaviva and Rosina together, and also defeating his arch enemies, Dr. Bartolo and Don Basilio, in the process. But not only that, I think he sees at the end of it a good match for Rosina and a happy future for her.
Dall'aurora al tramonto del dì, dall'aurora al tramonto del dì.
Almaviva is... He enters the opera disguised as the student Lindoro. He's a person, I think he's a person who knows his station. He knows his rank. He knows that he's of high class, wealthy. He's probably gone to grooming school. He's probably been taught, brought up in the way to know how to act and always be graceful, always be elegant. But Almaviva has a problem that I don't think he's ever encountered before. He is madly in love with someone who he's never met, but he doesn't know how to control his feelings for this person. He is dead set on trying to win the affections of this one young girl, who at this point has found out that her name is Rosina. I think Almaviva has probably had girls falling at his feet before. He's probably never had a problem with getting anyone he's wanted before. But because he's a person of character, which is why he comes disguised. He wants to win this girl's affections for who he is, and not because of his title and his rank. Fortunately, this time, We have Lotfi Mansouri, who's been really, really working with me on to try to build these characters so they are distinct. People, I think, see that it's the same person, but it has to be believable. The suspension of disbelief. I don't know if that's what the opera thing is, but basically selling these characters so they can be believable and very distinct. When he comes as Lindoro, he has to seem a little bit young, immature, not well-groomed, not really together. When he comes as the drunken soldier, he needs to act like he's out of his mind. He's really drunk. He's a loose cannon. When he comes as the music teacher, it's a bit like a little precious priest or something of that effect. And then when he comes at the end and reveals that he is the Count, it needs to be the elegance, the togetherness, the really in control character.
There are two very interesting things that Peter Brook says in his book. It's called The Empty Space. And he says, when you build a role, there are three points that you need to look. First, experience. Am I old? And did I, you know, how long I live? How old people look and act? So this brings us to the second point, which is observation. If you don't have the experience, go to a park and look at the people that there are in retirement, how they behave. And the third, if you don't have the possibility to use these two points, is imagination. So I imagine this Spanish, because it's a Spanish old guy with a lot of energy. I don't imagine very kind of tired guy. I imagine also that he plays a little, he's very... has an exaggerated dignity because he became a doctor, maybe because he has this complex of not being anything. But also he tries to make feel guilty people all the time. That's another point that I put into the character. To make feel guilty Rosina because she's not doing what he's saying, or trying to feel guilty, you know, the people in the house because they are not doing what he also has a very short patience. And of course, this is what I'm imagining, what is my experience with the grotesque of Dr. Bartolo. And physically, I'm trying to look as older than 42 years old, quick steps. But as you saw me in the stage, I am very animated. I don't want him to look that he's too old, because then the energy of the role comes down, and it doesn't make sense with the singing, because the singing of Bartolo is very brilliant. So if you make it too old, it's becoming, you know, it's like the singing is going one way and the acting is going another way. The favorite part, I mean, it's tough to choose one favorite part. For example, when Basilio's in his aria.
Piano, piano. voce, sibilando.
I'm not doing anything besides listening to Basilio, but to me it's an incredible pleasure to have, you know, Ferruccio Furlanetto singing in my ear, you know, and I am reacting to this guy that was my idol forever and is still my idol forever. So, you know, I have those particular close to my heart.
Basilio is one of the greatest between the bassist roles. It became a sort of tradition for the bassists that normally do serious roles, like myself. And this is probably what Rossini wanted, to put a serious bass into a sort of buffo role. Basilio is a teacher, music teacher, very filthy, is somebody really living day by day, just always searching for money, and of course he sees in Bartol a good opportunity for that, knowing that Bartol is going after Rosina and her money, so he sees a double opportunity of making money in this. And you have a lot of gags in this role, just taking advantage of this kind of attitude that he has. It's a long story. It goes back at the time, the early times of the Met for me. We did Barbieri also there, and also Maestro Müller is not only a great conductor, but is extremely good in preparation of the opera. And then don't forget that especially between conductors, it's not so easy to find somebody with a big heart like he has.
And I don't want to hear voice, just breath, warm breath.
Yeah, warm breath with ideas.
All right. Yeah. La forza.
Oh my God.
La forza.
Before, you know, I work very much according to the different singers I have. I use rehearsals for knowing them, for knowing what is their forte, what is their weaknesses, and I try to hide the weaknesses and to emphasize the forte.
Half the battle with the rehearsal process is either won or lost before you've even got there. And San Diego Opera in this instance have done a really great job in assembling not only a great cast, not again. Yes, here right, we go, right. Blowing our own trumpets.
You know, not us. But,
not us. Others, we're terrible. We're awful. We are the complete lame. No, I'm the complete lame duck of the cast. Nice. Kirsten is just a shining jewel.
Oh.
And then everybody else is wonderful. You know, they drag me along with them, which I'm very grateful for. But we have two real veterans.
Yes.
Of both the orchestral pit and the operatic stage.
Absolutely.
And I think the experience that both of them have brought to the rehearsal process has been utterly invaluable.
Truly.
Because they both know how it goes in their bones. There's no thinking about it. They know how it goes.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's during your when you're. Geez. And kind of, God, these guys are driving me nuts. The whole room. If I were doing a film, I would start having the room turn around. Like the whole thing is going nuts.
One of the greatest compliments for me as a stage director is when my work is not noticed. That I want people to leave the theater and say, my God, isn't this piece wonderful? Wasn't that a lovely piece? And wasn't that a lovely cast? Then that means I have really succeeded because I've told the people that this is a wonderful piece and that this is a lovely cast.
Don't forget, even the public is part of the show. And the reaction of the public gives something different to every performer. If the reaction of the public is positive, we are stimulated to give our best. My aim is to make even the empty seats to dance in the audience.
But it's not the right evening. Thank you very much.
2 Super Bowl.
Steelers.
We're going, and I have a show during the Super Bowl. We're going to the Super Bowl.